I read something this morning, actually, and I decided to tack it on to the first of the talk because it was really relevant to this, and I could relate a lot to this. So, it says, recently in a large French city, a poster featuring a young, thin, and tanned woman appeared in the window of a gym. It said, "This summer, do you want to be a mermaid or a whale?" You see why I could relate. Yeah, I could say. A middle-aged woman, whose physical characteristics did not match those of the woman on the poster, responded publicly to the question posed by the gym. She wrote, "To whom it may concern. Whales are always surrounded by friends, dolphins, sea lions, curious humans. They have a wonderful time with dolphins, stuffing themselves with shrimp. They play and swim in the seas, seeing wonderful places like Patagonia, the Barents Sea, and the coral reefs of Polynesia. Whales are wonderful singers and have even recorded CDs. They are incredible creatures and virtually have no predators other than humans. They are loved, protected, and admired by almost everyone in the world. Mermaids don't exist. If they did exist, they would be lining up outside the offices of Argentinian psychoanalysis due to identity crisis. Fish or human? Not to mention, who wants to get close to a girl who smells like a fish store? The choice is perfectly clear to me. I want to be a whale." Choices. Today is about choices. We make choices all the time. All the time. This morning, before you came here, you chose what time you wanted to get up. Maybe there was an alarm, maybe you just woke up on your own, but you got to choose whether you got out of bed or not. You got to choose what you wanted for breakfast, or if you didn't want breakfast. You got to choose what you wanted to wear. You got to choose which route you were going to take. Some of that may have been influenced by the flooding. Lots of choices, lots and lots of choices. Later, when you leave here, we have soup and salad downstairs. We get to choose. What do you want? I saw the list and they look amazing, you know. So we have choices, lots and lots of choices. And they all have consequences. Setting your alarm, if or not, you know, choosing what time you want to get up in the morning. If you choose to get up at 9:30, you're going to have to not take a shower. You're going to throw on some clothes, and you're going to beat it to get here by 10 o'clock. The choice. Or if you get up early, you know, you have more time. You might have time for breakfast. Consequences. Choosing what to wear. It was a little chilly this morning, so I took a jacket. Had I chosen to wear short sleeves, I would have been pretty chilly outside. The route you take. This one is, I try to watch my phone with Google Maps, you know, because it'll show you little red lines where there's traffic. And I try to be aware of what it is, but I can't tell you how many times I've forgotten to look at it or not paid attention, and so chosen a route that, you know, got me there late or, you know. There are consequences to just about everything, or really everything that we do, every decision that we make. Some certainly are bigger than others. The you know, what I'm going to wear, what time I get up, you know, next week I won't even remember. But sometimes there are bigger consequences. We have a little skit today that is going to illustrate a man who had some choices to make, and we'll see what happened to him. So if our players would come forward.
Long ago, in the Riverport city called Novgorod the Great, there lived a young musician named Sadko.
Every day, a rich merchant or noble would send a messenger to Sadko's door calling him to play at a feast. Sadko would grab his 12-string goosely and rush to the banquet hall. There he'd pluck the strings of his instrument till all the guests were dancing.
Eat your fill, the host would tell him later, pointing to the table and passing him a few small coins besides.
And on such as he was given did Sadko live.
Often his friends would ask him,
how can you survive on so little?
It's not so bad,
Sadko would reply.
And anyway, how many of you can do have a different feast every day, play the music they love, and watch the whole room dance?
Sadko was proud of his city, the richest and most free in all of Russia. He would walk through busy market square, lined with merchants in their stalls and teeming with traders from many lands. He never crossed the square without hearing tongues from far-off places, from Italy to Norway to Persia.
Down at the piers, he would see the sailing ships with their cargoes of lumber, grain, hides, pottery, spices, precious metals. And crossing the great bridge over the river Volkhov, Sadko would catch the glint from the gilded roofs of a dozen white stone churches.
Is there any such city anywhere than Novgorod? It's the only city in there that's like this. No other place could it be.
Yet sometimes Sadko was lonely.
The maidens who danced gaily to his music at the feast would often smile at him, and more than one had set his heart on fire. But they were rich, and he was poor, and not one of them would think of being his.
One lonely evening, Sadko walked sadly beyond the city walls and down along the broad river Volkhov. He came to his favorite spot on the bank and set his goosely on his lap.
Gentle waves brushed the shore and moonlight glimmered on the water.
My lovely river Volkhov, rich man, poor man, it's all the same to you. If only you were a woman, I'd marry you and I'd live right here in the city I love.
Sadko plucked a sad tune, then a peaceful one, then a merry one, and the tinkling notes of his goosely floated over the Volkhov.
All at once the river grew rough and strong waves began to slap the banks.
Heaven help me,
cried Sadko as a large shape rose from the water.
Before him stood a huge man with a pearl-encrusted crown atop a flowing mane of seaweed.
Musician, behold, the king of the sea. To this river I have come to visit one of my daughters, the Princess Volkova. Your sweet music reached us on the river bottom, where it pleased us greatly.
Thank you, Your Majesty.
Soon I will return to my own palace. I wish you to play there at a feast.
Gladly. But where is it? How do I get there?
Why, under the sea, of course. I'm sure you'll find your way. But meanwhile, you need not wait for your reward.
Something large jumped from the river and flopped at Sadko's feet. A fish with golden scales. As Sadko watched in amazement, it stiffened and turned to solid gold.
Your Majesty, you're too generous.
Say no more about it. Music is worth far more than gold. If the world were fair, you'd have your fill of riches.
And with a splash, he sank in the river and was gone.
The next morning, Sadko arrived at the market square just as the stalls were opening. He quickly sold the golden fish to an astonished merchant. Then, hurrying to the piers, he booked his passage on a ship, leaving Novgorod that very day.
Down the Volkhov, the ship sailed across Lake Ladoga and the Gulf of Finland and into the Baltic Sea. As it sped above the deep water, Sadko peered over the rail.
In all the wide sea, How can I ever find this place?
Just then, the ship shuddered to a halt. The wind filled the sails, yet the ship stood still, as if a giant hand had grasped it. The captain cried out to his crew,
"It must be the king of the sea. Perhaps he seeks tribute or someone among us."
"Don't be troubled. I know who he seeks."
And clutching his goosel, he jumped from the ship.
Down sank Sadko, down all the way to the sea floor. The red sun shone dimly through the water above, while before him stood a white stone palace.
Sadko passed through a coral gate. As he reached the huge palace doors, they swung open to reveal a giant hall.
The elegant room was filled with guests and royal attendants, herring and sprats, cod and flounder, gobies and sticklebacks, sand eels and sea scorpions, crabs and lobsters, starfish and squid, sea turtles and giant sturgeon.
Standing among the guests were dozens of maidens, river nymphs, the sea king's daughters. On a shell throne at the end of the hall sat the sea king and his queen.
"You're just in time. Musician, come sit by me and let the dance begin."
Sadko set his goosely on his lap and plucked a merry tune. Soon all the fish swam in graceful figures. The seafloor crawlers cavorted. The river maidens leaped and spun.
"I like that tune."
The king jumped to the center of the hall and joined the dance. His arms waved, his robe swirled, his hair streamed, his feet stamped.
"Faster, play faster."
Sadko played faster and the king's dance grew wilder. All the others stopped and watched in awe. Ever more madly did he move, whirling faster, leaping higher, stamping harder.
The sea queen whispered urgently,
"Musician, end your tune. It seems to you the king merely dances in the hall. But above us, the sea is tossing ships like toys, and giant waves are breaking on the shore."
Alarmed, Sadko pulled a string till it snapped.
"Your Majesty, my goosely is broken."
"A shame,"
said the sea king, winding to a stop.
"I could have danced for days. But a fine fellow you are, Sadko. I think I'll marry you to one of my daughters and keep you here forever."
"Your Majesty, beneath the sea, your word is law. But this is not my home. I love my city of Novigrad."
"Oh, say no more. Say no more about it. Now behold your bride, the Princess Volkova."
The princess stepped forward. Her green eyes were sparkling, and a soft smile graced her lips.
"Dearest Sadko, at last we can be together. For years I have thrilled to the music you've played on the shore."
"Volkova, you're as lovely as the river."
But the sea queen leaned over and said softly,
"You are a good man, Sadko, so I will tell you the truth. If you but once kiss or embrace her, you can never return to your city again."
That night, Sadko lay beside his bride on a bed of seaweed. He longed to hold her, but time after time, the queen's words came back to him.
"Never return to your city again."
And his arms stayed frozen at his sides.
"Dearest, why do you not embrace me?"
It's our custom of my city that we never kiss or embrace on the first night."
"Then I fear you never will."
And she turned away.
When Sadko awoke the next morning, he felt sunlight on his face. He opened his eyes and saw beside him not the Princess Volkova, but the river Volkhov, and behind him rose the walls of Novigrad.
"My home,"
said Sadko, and he wept, perhaps for joy at his return, perhaps for sadness at his loss, perhaps for both.
The years were good to Sadko. With the money that remained to him, he bought a ship and goods enough to fill it. And so Sadko became a merchant, and in time, the richest man in Novgorod. What's more, he married a fine young woman and raised a family.
Yet sometimes still, on a quiet evening, he would walk out of the city alone, sit on the bank, and send his tinkling music over the water. And sometimes, too, a lovely head would rise up from the water to listen.
Or perhaps it was only the moonlight on the Volkhov.
Great job, guys. Thanks. So Sadko had some choices, did he not? First, he two majors, I distill all of that, looking at the choices that he made two major choices. One was to follow his passion and play his music. And the second was to essentially refuse the marriage of the princess. And there are consequences. There are always consequences. The first one, playing the music, listening to that passion. I've told my kids, you know, if you just find something that you really like to do, it won't seem like work. You know? And sometimes earlier they would scoff and, well, no, I need to make money. But it's always a choice. You know, what are we going to do in this life? And so Sadko chose early on in the first part, before the river experience, or the sea experience, he chose to continue to play his music. It seemed that he had some gift that would cause all the people to be happy and merry and dance. He never got ahead financially. He always had banquet food to eat, and he had friends. So the consequences were he was enjoying his day-to-day experience. He was living the life that he wanted at that time, and it was good for that time. On the sad or the negative side of that, the consequences were that he was lonely. Because he had no money, he couldn't hope to win the favor or even maybe attention of any of the maidens that he found so beautiful. So the first decision was that he took this life of his passion. That's what he was doing. The second major choice that he had, because he was down there doing what he always does, right? He was playing for someone who hired him to do that. And then he was offered this bride, beautiful sea nymph, the daughter of the sea king. And apparently she was very beautiful, but he decided to not do that. He decided that he couldn't live there. He didn't want to give up his ability to choose where he would be or go. He had to stay there. So the second major choice that he made was to refuse the marriage. And he woke up and was back on the shore outside his city that he loved. Consequences of that. Maybe in the short term, if you just look at that period of time, might have seemed sad. You know, he wept. Perhaps he was a little sad because he was giving up this love of a beautiful woman. No, I'm not princess anyway. But longer-term consequences were really pretty good. He ended up being able to stay in the city. He ended up with the money that he had gotten from the golden fish, buying a merchant. He became a merchant. He bought a ship and all of that. He became wealthy. He was able to then find and attract a person to marry. So in the long run, it really was a good choice. Sadko was not one who made that choice impulsively. Who's ever made a choice impulsively? yeah, too many times. I've gotten better about that. We make choices, and and I think it has to do a lot with the ability to maybe postpone gratification, at least sometimes. I've seen some videos of on YouTube, I think, on Facebook has them once in a while. There was a video of children, and they were talking to the child and saying, if you can, and they put a marshmallow on a plate in front of the child. And then they would leave the room, and they asked the child to wait, not eat the marshmallow just yet. And so you'd see the child squirming and sitting on his hands and then doing everything. And some of the kids were able to wait. And when they waited, the person set a second marshmallow on the plate and said, go ahead and eat. And it wasn't a big deal if they did eat, but they only got the one marshmallow if they didn't wait. Can we wait? Can we delay that gratification for a moment or not? How do we make our choices? My ex had a sister, and she told a story about him and her when they were children. And it seems that my ex, well, they would each get a candy when it was time, you know, I guess once a week they'd go into town to get groceries or whatever they do, and each child would get a candy of some kind, whatever it was. And my husband would take a bite and then put it away and save it for the next day. And then the next day he'd get it out and take another bite, put it away. His sister ate the whole thing right away. Just, and it was gone. And then by the time Jimmy was about the third or fourth day, she was going crazy, please just give me a bite of the candy. And he never did. That's what she said anyway. How do we make choices in our lives? What is the basis for making our choices? Now, we know some of the impulsive choices are based on media, advertising. You know, in the grocery store, there are candy bars right there when you're checking out, you know. And if you watch TV, they want you to be convinced that you have whatever it is, ailment-wise, so that you'll buy that medication, or you'll be happy if you buy this product. So a lot of the impulsiveness that is kind of our nature, you know, we want it, we want things, and the advertisers feed into that so that we'll give in over and over. So there's impulsively. Worriedly. Do you ever make choices and worry about the choice you made, or if worry up to the point of the choice, the decision? I see a hand, yeah. Or do we make choices confidently? Sometimes. When we look at Sadko, I'd have to say that he kind of followed his heart. Some inner knowing, some resource that he had that allowed him to know that he would be happiest when he was playing his music, happiest when he was doing what came natural for him. He seemed to know that his love of the city, his city, was bigger and more important to him than marriage to this princess. He knew that. We have something that will make it easier, I believe, and in the long run with better consequences all the time. And that something that we have is that power within us. That power that is wisdom, that is all-knowingness. All we need do is what we talk about every week, is to become still, to settle, to kind of tune out all of the outside activity and as much as you can, the chatter that goes on in our minds. Just being still and perhaps asking, what is mine to do in this? What is mine to be? And when we listen, often we get an answer. The answer might be a knowing. I've had it show up for me that way. It might be something in the outside that presents itself. I think I've told the story about how when I was driving here for my interview with the board, I somewhere along the way between Jeff City and here on Interstate 70 asked the question of the universe, is this the right thing to do? Is this mine to do? And it wasn't long, and there was a road sign on the side that said Wright City. Well, okay then. Thank you very much. True, that's very true. When we open ourselves to that power, that presence, we know then that the choices that we make are going to be of the best consequence, of the highest and best for everyone concerned. It is then that we can drop the worriedness, that we can drop that impulsivity, and we can make wonderful choices. Let's pause now, as we do each week, to practice that alignment, to practice being at one with our Creator. So I invite you to gently close your outer eyes. To purposely relax. Let your body become heavy on the seat. Feel fully supported by your seat. From the top of your head to the soles of your feet, allow the muscles to relax and let go. Be present here. Become aware of your body, the sensations that you're experiencing. Notice the temperature, whether you're cool or warm. Observe what you're paying attention to, the sounds, feeling, texture of your hands on your clothing. And as you focus your attention on your body, you are aware that there's a chatter that is going, but it's kind of like in the background. You can easily tune it out. And let us, for right now, keep our focus, our attention on our bodies. And now breathe in deeply. Hold for just a second, and then release. And notice how your body feels as you do that. Breathe in again, deeply and slowly, filling your lungs. And release. And if you will keep your attention just on your sensations, on what you notice as you breathe in, and breathe out. We begin the process of becoming still. We are in the process of becoming still. Our bodies are quiet, just breathing. Our minds are attached to the movement, the flow of the breath in and out. We have released everything that came before and that is coming when we walk through those doors. We are totally here, still, breathing. And as we do this, we become receptive. We become open and willing vessels, channels, if you will, for divine ideas, for all the good that that God is and that God is as us to manifest. We become peace. Here and now, open, willing, and receptive, we are peace. And we are love. We are that light. The truth of our beings is that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And so in this stillness, we experience ourselves as spirit, as peace, as love, as joy, as prosperity, as vibrant health, as wisdom. We are the channel for all that God is to express through and as. And as we allow ourselves to be still and to be this expression, we enable ourselves, both now and going forward into our days, we enable ourselves to make the best choices, to always know that we are not alone, that we have all that we need, to know that those decisions and choices that we make are inspired by our highest selves, that divinity. And it is in this knowing that comes trust. So then we begin to be more like the current that flows. We flow from one experience to the next, knowing and trusting that God is in charge. God only wants good for us, and that there is good, nothing but good ahead. We are easily able to sail through challenges and storms in our lives because of the peace that is our reality, because of the love that is our reality. And so here and today, we set an intention to be open and receptive, to be open and willing, and to also be willing to stop when there is a choice point, to stop and breathe and go back to that center and asking the question, waiting for the answer, and then allowing yourself to follow the guidance. We get to choose. And so now, as we do each week, let us take some time in stillness to experience this presence, experience this oneness in the silence. And we are grateful. We are grateful that we have a creator that knows no fear, that is always constant love, that is always constant inspiration. And with that creator, with that parent, we know that we can make the very best choices. So in gratitude and in honor of this presence, let us speak the words that Jesus taught us as the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And leave us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.